I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Bottles and cans, just clap your hands, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. England underwhelmed, Wales disappointed, and Everton have been punished. It's Monday, 20th of November. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushan Hantaraja.
Welcome, one and all, to another Football Ramble on a magnificent Monday. It's good to be with you. It's bloody good to be with you. And it's good to be with you, Jim, and you, Vish.
Thanks, mate.
Vish, you're extra focused now. The Cricket World Cup is over.
Yeah. It was a bit like Alien versus Predator. Like, whoever wins out of Australia versus India, we all lose. But now, you, congratulations to Australia.
Little dig there.
Hope it makes you happy.
Ridiculous. And I'm sure it did make them happy.
Yeah.
But that wasn't your highlight of the weekend.
No.
I want to know what was your highlight.
My highlight of the weekend was actually pettier than what I've just said.
Go on then.
My highlight of the weekend, which was also emailed in by listener Utsav, it was Shakira winning Song of the Year at the Latin Grammys.
Great. Well, that's a highlight for us all, really.
Yeah, and, you know, she wins awards. That's what she does. It's for the song where she disses Gerard Piqué.
Oh,
brilliant.
Okay.
That brings us into focus.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
We're involved now.
We're listening.
It was presented to her by Sergio Ramos.
It is absolutely masterful, this, isn't it? To me, I know there's a lot of stuff has happened this weekend. This is the story. This is the one that we will look back on. Forget Everton getting deducted points.
Yeah.
20 years from now, we'll be like, do you remember when Sergio Ramos presented the award to Shakira?
That's how Everton fans will remember it. Which weekend it was? When?
what's
Ramos doing there? We know what he's doing.
He's doing exactly what you think he's doing. He's being a shit.
He is
staking his claim as the greatest shithouse of all time. Now, I imagine most people know the context of this, but obviously Gerard Piqué and Shakira have broken up because she discovered some of her jam was missing.
This is incredible flat. How she felt.
She knows that Gerard Piqué doesn't like jam. She was like, who's been eating the jam? Gerard. And then it all unraveled from there.
And he went,
she's created this song about him that's very, very, like, directly calls him out. And it's been this absolutely huge global hit, which is not ideal for Gerard, I'd imagine. And then his old international teammate, who's won so much alongside him in that team, in that
right
defense,
alongside him,
is the guy who goes, here you go, here's an award for that. Let's crystallise the success of this brilliant song.
I wanted to read a little bit more into it just to find out, for example, if Ramos was always going to present this award.
Yeah.
And then I realised the idea in my head was better, which was, it was basically Kanye and Taylor Swift all over again, only the other way around.
Right, he insisted on it.
Where he comes on and says, just by the way, you really deserve this.
Yeah.
Hands it over.
But this was always a possibility, wasn't it? Surely, if he was... So was he always...
Yeah. Like it was set in stone, yeah. Mm. But it was unbelievable.
And they knew.
Ramos managed to leave the ceremony with an award of his own, score a goal and get a red card. quite incredibly. So yeah, but you're right, they play for their rivals, each of the rivals, of course, and then they were great international teammates. Do we see in years to come, do we see a similar situation with Stones and Maguire? Or does it not quite?
Who knows? I think
I think there's too much harmony. I think there's too much harmony and honour, quite frankly.
Mm.
But there we are. What a highlight of everybody's weekend that was. Jim Campbell, what about yours?
Mine was the reinvention of Kai Havertz as a free scoring left back.
Right.
As he started for Germany at left back, and he scored within 5 minutes. He also gave away a penalty and shepherded out one of his own touches for a throw in, strangely. So actually. I mean, he's our very own Captain Kaios. People were thinking, can he replace Granit Xhaka? The answer is definitively yes, just not in the way we meant.
That's like
the old one, the old Xhaka.
He's a bit Eeyore, isn't he?
He actually owns a donkey sanctuary.
Oh, of course, yeah. So we've been through this,
Yes, very much so. Maybe he's spending too much time with him. Maybe that's why he looks so sad.
For a man who scored the only goal very well in a Champions League final.
And the Club World Cup final as well.
Yeah, has there been such a fall from grace? Or such an odd fall, a stumble from grace, perhaps?
It's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, has the grace ever been there? I think he's always been a bit of a sort of... Since he's come to England, he's been a bit of a mysterious character, isn't he? The sense that people are trying to unlock the player that was there at Leverkusen.
Yeah.
Perhaps he's a different player from what we thought, etc., etc., etc. But him proving everyone wrong as a left-back is certainly my highlight.
My highlight of the weekend, it's got to be from the England game. Was Declan Rice's goal, even though it didn't stand.
Yeah, we'll come on to that, presumably. Imagine that happened in a World Cup.
I know, it was a lovely strike. He looked so pleased. And then I fell asleep. Look, come on then, let's go to it. England 2, Malta 0, let's get it out of the way. Harry Kane, it was not our finest performance. That was an understatement,
that's
of course.
Fair enough, Harry.
England's first shot didn't come until the 39th minute. And their first shot on target wasn't until the 64th minute. Now, I don't want to be nasty to Malta, because it's a fine country, but that is piss poor from England.
It is, isn't it? I'm actually quite pleased that Southgate seemed quite annoyed about it, in as far as Southgate ever gets annoyed about anything, by saying we do need to raise the level, we need to be targeting being the number one ranked team in the world, and we've got to be essentially got to be better than this.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, England still have this in them, don't they? And that's possibly it's just the realities of a qualifying campaign.
Oh, it is.
You've already won the group. There's nothing really to play for. But you know, you want to entertain the fans and keep that feel good factor going. And it's hard to understand really where this performance came from.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to read too much into it. I think the point is that
absolutely,
a lot of people travel quite far to watch England, you know, so I just thought you do owe them a little bit of a Friday
night.
Well,
I think if that third goal stands, and it, of course it should stand, that's absolutely nuts for me. Kane's in an offside position that's, what's...
Interfering with play.
Really, is that fair?
Well, he jumps out the way of the ball. I can see how it's been given, so I'm not going to argue about that. But the point is, the performance was so lacklustre, you know, but I kind of understand, you know, Joe Cole said it as well. You know, they go 1-0 up fairly early on. They've got big games for their club coming. They've got a bigger game against a better opponent in qualifying. They have already qualified, and it is a bit like, do we really have to? But there was a couple of occasions where I thought, Malta fancy this.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, imagine if Malta nicked a point at Wembley, you know.
Well, that would have been, we would have thrown ourselves into chaos, like voluntarily thrown ourselves into chaos.
Yeah, but I do think that's one of the better things about this England team, and perhaps nowadays, or maybe it is just this, is that even if England had qualified, say, this 8-10 years ago, and that performance would have happened, oh my goodness,
yeah,
it would have been absolutely... Whereas I think most people are kind of going, that was a bit crap, wasn't it?
Well, it's interesting how the priorities have changed, right? Because... let's say that had happened 10 years ago, this sort of performance, and there were many performances that would have been sort of an equivalent of this. What we would be talking about in this studio was how England are so dull to watch now that even when they get to a tournament, they don't give you any memories to take away. There are no great moments. There's essentially no hope of them doing anything exciting at the tournament. We're so far past that now that we are talking about England as genuine contenders. And we used to mock the tabloids for that in those eras when they, you know, I know we're going back a bit further now, but the 2006 World Cup, everyone was talking about winning it. And I think
Even in 2010, there was still...
Yeah.
You kind of go, oh, I mean, we never know.
exactly. But yeah. We'd be like, no, the other countries just are at a far better technical level, et cetera. And that's not the case anymore. And I suppose that's something to be thankful for. And a reminder that these performances can always be there in circumstances where it's just hard to, I suppose, be that motivated.
Yeah, some things
Although
are...
look at France.
True. France aren't going to play 10-man Gibraltar every game, though, like that. But I do take your point. Some things are consistent, and I'm glad to say that at Wembley, the paper aeroplanes were out in force fish.
Good.
Yeah.
You know.
Mexican wave as well.
Yeah, really? That's very Wembley areas. Yeah. I mean, did we not see this kind of stagnant performance coming, given the nature of the build-up with
Maybe.
Players pulling out squads and calling up children for no reason? I think it was a very old guard friendly feel to that game.
Yeah.
And I think... I mean, you know, Jim, you mentioned the goal there that suddenly adds a bit more gloss on it. But, like, I mean, I thought that was a penalty that Harry Kane should have got given when the keeper took him out. Obviously, we've seen Kane.
what Southgate should have done was he should have been fuming about that.
Yeah, exactly.
He smashed his hand on the
table. I am embarrassed.
Where's international pug bowl?
This is absolutely...
Give me an apology. I want an apology.
Make it all about the decision.
Yeah.
We were robbed. How can we play? How are we meant to be inspired to play this beautiful game with that?
Yeah,
we always get a penalty. Harry had to score an open play.
Yeah. Imagine if he went, look, I know what it is, because we're favourites for the Euros, you know, referees are against us. It's just like really Mourinho. Yeah. I've noticed this a little bit, actually. I've kept really quiet, but I think this is disgraceful.
Like a total change of tact, and you think, He's going for that. He's thinking this will get us over the line in Germany.
You know, Cameron's come in now. We need to do something about this. Because I'm glad he's on my side.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, it was interesting that he seemed to go for a 3-4-3 at the start of the game.
But do you not think that tallied with what our prediction on, or the way we talked about it on Friday, was about experimentation within the parameters, pre-existing parameters.
Yeah, but I was surprised that he went for that because I don't think they'll use that formation much, if at all, at the summer. I mean, I suppose he's maybe just keeping...
It depends who's in our group, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose he's sort of keeping his eye in the game with regards to that. And if he is going to do that, then he is going to start a number of the players that you would think would feature.
He's also probably looking at change in shape within the games, right?
Yeah, like exactly.
The top teams can do that at international level. Despite not having a lot of time together. So this is how you get that ready, right?
So maybe a reminder for some of those players, because they did that during the Euros, of course. In the World Cup, it tended to be, well, I think always was, maybe apart from a few minutes here and there, of that sort of 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 or whatever you want to call it. Either way, it wasn't too inspiring. But it was nice to see Cole Palmer make his England debut, Jim.
It was, yeah. And get mugged off by Jules as well.
Yes. Jules will do that. You do get the impression with Cole Palmer, I know it's been said at club level for a while, but he doesn't seem to be fazed by anything.
No, he doesn't. And actually, I remember Gareth Southgate said a little while ago, he was a little bit concerned about the conveyor belt of talent seeming to be lacking a little bit in terms of the next generation. And I think Cole Palmer sort of makes a mockery of that. He's a player who, I wonder if this Euros might come a little bit early for him.
Possibly.
But he's clearly a player that's going to have a bright England future, you would think. And you're right, we talk about players being refreshing so often that it's not actually refreshing, it's just consistently enjoyable. But he's not fazed by anything, is he? He seems really, really deadpan. Mm-hmm. Just very, very confident and just not at all overawed by the situation he finds himself in, which is one of pretty quick rise to prominence at a club where he's moved to a new city, doesn't really know anyone, been at City since he was like a fetus, essentially. he's got the attitude that is needed to succeed, clearly, and that is a wonderful thing for us.
Yeah, I suppose it's credit to City as well that they can keep a kid in the cupboard for, I say, as long, like it's actually quite a normal stage of his development. You know, you've got to work up to break into the first team, especially at a club with that many exceptional players. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's able to go somewhere else and, as you say, like not be overawed by anything, that's obviously a lot of behind the scenes dealing with the personality and the person as much as the talent, I suppose.
Yeah, and we didn't see too many others. I mean, we didn't see any minutes for Konsa or Lewis. I don't think we were particularly surprised about Lewis.
Yeah.
But again, he, you know, he brought on Bukayo Saka. You know, he didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't bring on that. It was really Cole Palmer, I suppose, was the kind of the obvious sort of standout one. Maybe because it was flat. Maybe if there'd have been four or five, maybe a bit harsher on Malta. But maybe if it had been 3-0 up at half time, he might have done something. But I think Southgate was a bit like, bloody hell, you know, this. You know, we don't want them to nick an equaliser and suddenly we're scrambling to sort of win or something like that. But the next game, of course, is against North Macedonia. That's tonight. You and I will be doing a Ramble Reacts after that one.
Yes, we will.
Which we look forward to, of course. So do subscribe now so you don't miss any of that or future episodes, of course, everybody. Kieran Trippier won't travel to North Macedonia, pulling out of the squad due to a personal matter. Jared Bowen is also withdrawn through injury. So that means 7 players in total have pulled out of the England squad. So, you know, I mean, they're still sort of... They're not light on the ground, shall we say. But will he experiment a bit more, or do you think it'll be more of the same?
I think it will be more of the same based on this, because, you know, the remit's essentially the same, isn't it? I'd like to see, you know, players like Konsa get a chance, but he often doesn't do that. I mean, even in a meaningless qualifier, I would be surprised. I'd be happy to see it.
Yeah. But... Well, I suppose for Southgate's point of view, is he's thinking to himself, realistically, all things being well, will a player like Konsa be called upon? Mm. And if that the answer is no, you're just kind of bringing him in to... So if England... Depends where Konsa is in the pecking order. I assume he's a few players down. So you're thinking to yourself, the chances are he won't play at all at the Euros.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not even get in the squad. But what would be good is to familiarise him to, you know... He's been up the driveway to St George's Park in near Burton. Do you know what I mean? He's worn the tracksuit. You know, he's comfy in it. You know, it's these sorts of things.
He's been to Burton.
He knows the training ground. Yeah. No, but do you know what I mean? It's these little things that you can familiarise someone with. So it's not completely alien.
It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't take away from anyone. It doesn't detract from him that he's going in and not necessarily getting a start. Because I suppose, if anything, it's you're this close to it, but to be a bit closer, you need to step up. And I think it's fine. I think he's quietly been good. Like, Southgate has quietly been good at not just handing out caps for the sake of it. And I think there is something to be said for that. I think there are some players we could argue that maybe he was a bit too tentative about. I'm thinking of Maddison off the top of my head, and maybe Tomori a little bit. But I think by and large, he's... If you've earned it, you've got it.
Yeah. Well, the idea is that you go in and that you might be a starter there one day, right? It's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luke's made the point really well in the past that an England cap isn't a Player of the Month award.
Yeah.
And that should be the case. And to be fair to Southgate, he is pretty good at that.
Yeah. They should do that, though. Imagine how many people get offended. They are John McGinn, your Premier League Player of the Month. There's an England cap. What's this? I want chips. I want my chips.
Evan Ferguson, you've been playing, you've been playing really well, son.
I mean, you were going to want this anyway.
Oh, you've got one on now. You might as well come and see the training ground.
Don't worry about the rules and what you actually want. Let's do it. Interesting, though. I'm pretty sure Konsa was one of a few England players that didn't have a beverage on him when they were leaving St George's Park, going onto the team bus.
So you're worried about his hydration?
I did, not necessarily.
Unprofessional levels of hydration.
I just love the England socials.
I see.
Yeah, it's very good.
Arriving at St George's Park, leaving St George's Park, it does it for me, Jim. It really does. What was interesting, though, is they're all coming out, what have you got? And, you know, they're all going, oh, latte or a flat white or whatever. And I was like, and Sam Johnson went, Banoffee and vanilla milkshake. And I was like, my man.
Yeah. It's so good. Because
he knows he's not going to play. Give me the milkshake.
Grealish and Rico Lewis walked out as well. They were both having the Banoffee milkshake.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's lovely, that.
That's what it's all about.
Imagine if they went, Rico, banana milkshake, hundreds and thousands, some called Space Raiders.
Yeah, I thought Southgate had taken away the syrup that they put in their coffees in St George's Park.
I'm sure Jack's got a connect.
Yeah. Who was it? Was it
Papi Ciso?
Bentley. David Bentley, when Jimmy Bullard was on England duty with him and he was going, I'm starving. And he was really, really hungry because he used to eat a bit more or whatever. And he phoned David Bentley, who was in the camp. I don't think this was probably pre-St George's days, I would imagine. And he said, David, I'm a bit hungry, because he knew him quite well. And Bentley was like, don't worry. And like, one of David Bentley's mates, in clandestine operation style, have visited the training ground, like poked him, like in prison, poked a McDonald's through the bars of the windows or something. So they had
how far we've come.
Yeah.
David Bentley and Jimmy Bullard
McDonald's
into the camp
on England duty. Okay, so if any of you moan at Southgate, remember that. Okay,
remember when we had the Dapper Laughs brothers
Oh, dear. Let's move on swiftly to Armenia 1, Wales 1. Wales' chances of qualifying for the Euros in Germany are no longer in their own hands.
Yeah. Armenia, rather, had a real chance to win this as well. Yeah. Really, it must be so frustrating. They just seem to have had Wales' number a little bit.
They do. I mean, yeah, they scored a lovely goal. Did they just score good goals?
It seems that way, Armenia,
isn't it? It's quite extraordinary.
It's an absolute
really.
Rifled shot.
Yeah. I think, like, all things considered, you're right. Armenia had their tails up. I know Wales had a couple of moments. Ultimately, they wanted that victory. I know this sounds a bit silly because, you know, the Wales fans say, oh, come on. But to try and give them a little bit of something, at least they got a point. I know it won't feel like that at all, but they still can qualify. They basically, if they need to beat Turkey, but which they always did need to do. So it's the same job for them. It's just with regards to Croatia and Armenia. They want their old friends Armenia to do them a favour. Because if Croatia don't win, then Wales would, a victory against Turkey would do it because they would beat Croatia on head-to-head. So that is not all lost. When people say, oh, we did the hard work, that was pointless being Croatia. No, it's not, as it stands. That does make sure that Wales are still very much in play. Of course, Croatia will be favourites to beat Armenia. Mm. But Armenia, you never know.
You know, they're the kingmakers at the moment, right? Potentially.
Yes.
Who knows?
It's unlikely. I mean, Wales could also still qualify as they're likely to receive a playoff spot because of their results in the Nations League.
So that's good.
So they're still alive.
It was just a very disappointing game. Real low quality fare. And by the end of it, I think Wales got a bit too desperate and were making really stupid decisions. And it was actually quite sad seeing both teams, because Armenia were an outside shot to qualify as well. And it was quite sad at the full-time whistle, both sets of players falling to the floor.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But Wales have got to play Turkey. And Turkey, of course, head into that game with a 3-2 victory in their back pocket against Germany. Julian Nagelsmann's Germany, his first game on home turf. And as you mentioned, Kai Havertz scored. But I would implore anybody to watch the highlights of that game, because the second Turkish goal in that game is one of the most emphatic finishes you will see this season. Absolutely glorious strike, in off bar and post. And he really meant it.
Delish.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I wonder if that'll give Andy Brass a little bit of a bit of a shot in the arm with regards to Turkey. But anyway, Hungary qualified at the weekend with a win over Montenegro. Dominic Szoboszlai put in a man of the match performance, and then did some shots with the fans to celebrate. Which quite nice. Yeah.
He didn't look like he really wanted to do it too much, or that he'd enjoyed it once he had done it. But the key thing is that he did do it.
Exactly. And also in that group, then Serbia have qualified in Group G to the European Championships for the first time in their very recent history under Serbia, we should state. They've been to the World Cup a couple of times of late, but not been to the Euros, funny enough. Usually it'd be the other way around, of course. But they're there, and we're going to see Alexander Mitrovic in Germany.
Are you looking forward to seeing him again?
Aren't we all, Jim? Yeah.
Would you if you saw him in Germany, would you embrace him? Would you go up to him and be like,
I think that's dangerous, isn't it?
Embracing him.
No.
Approach Mitrovic.
No.
Embrace him.
Yeah, I think you just have to do it slowly, don't you? I think if you do it too quickly, you get startled.
I think, up a tree.
No,
I think if you had a Fulham something on your person to suggest you're a Fulham fan, I'm sure he would be bloody loving it.
Right, would he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we should put this to the test.
I'm going to try and kidnap him and bring him back.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anything, I'll be like, oh no, I've woken up in Saudi Arabia. I think he would bloody love to bump into some Fulham fans. He was a wonderful player for Fulham.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. He probably, you know, you never know what happens after the Euros. You might fancy coming back.
You never know. Would you embrace Carlos Tevez if you oddly saw him at the Euros?
I would, but he kind of... I always get the impression that he would like just do something to you.
He'd run away and like get you arrested. I think he would moan about you.
He'd pat you on the back and you'd have a Man City sticker on your back.
Yeah. Or you like just like nibble at your neck or something.
Maybe. All right, everybody. Let's have a quick break.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
And that's why Bayern Munich paid £100 million for him, even when he's 30 years of age. He's a special player. He's a world-class player. But I've just got to go for Thierry.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Thanks to friend of the Ramble, Pace, for choosing that clip. Of course, you can become a friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. We want your friendship, for crying out loud. Right. Gentlemen, let's depart the international arena just for a moment, because a huge story broke about half an hour after we finished recording Friday's show. Everton have been deducted 10 points, it was announced. This was after being found to have breached the Premier League's financial rules. Now, clubs are permitted to lose £105 million over 3 years. And an independent commission found that Everton had lost £124.5 million in the last 3 years. So, Jim, they were slapped with a 10-point deduction. That is being considered by some as very harsh. Others say if you break the rules, that's the punishment. But this is quite unprecedented, and it is the biggest points deduction we've seen in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to make the distinction that essentially it's a result of a lot of mismanagement, isn't it? Rather than any sort of dishonesty or any attempt to sort of disguise what they were spending. But that said, those rules are still there, and they have just unquestionably broken them. Now, I think there are a lot of mitigating circumstances that the independent investigators seem to have essentially just dismissed. But 10 points still seems incredibly harsh. And it sets down a marker. And we'll come on to the ramifications of what it might mean for certain other clubs later,
yeah,
I'm sure. But they seem shocked by it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing is, though, it's that even if it is because of incompetence, they've gained an advantage by spending more money than their rivals, right? And that is part of what this is set out to discourage and to stop. And also, because it's not FFP, is it? It's the Premier League's essentially sustainability rules, which is, just gets lumped in and described as FFP and a bit of a misnomer.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is there as well to stop another lead happening. And
yeah, it's protecting clubs from themselves in some
essentially,
ways.
And they've had so many different managers come in and bought so many different types of players that have then moved on, and there was a lot of kind of almost hopeful accounting within the stories we saw about this, about them expecting to get another £20 million for Richarlison that they couldn't. But essentially, your valuations of your own players are just your own valuations, right? You can't be too you can't pin too much hope on that. They have been unlucky with various different things happening, like player X, as we have to call him, and the loss of potential revenue there. They were hit hard by COVID, but then everybody was hit hard by COVID. The war in Ukraine was something that they've had to deal with, that to my knowledge, no other clubs have had to deal with, obviously apart from Chelsea, with Usmanov being sanctioned, and therefore that kind of revenue stream drying up, and potential sponsorship of the stadium and Finch Farm drying up as well. But the commission found that essentially every club runs into unexpected circumstances, and that they're just going to have to suck it up. And like I say, that's what makes me think the points deduction, or certainly the number of points, is harsh.
Yeah,
because there are a lot of circumstances there. Yes, they've been mismanaged, but been incredibly unlucky with the timing of a lot of things as well.
Well, they're due to appeal the decision, and their statement reads, "The club does not recognise the finding that it failed to act with the utmost good faith. The harshness and severity of the sanction imposed by the Commission are neither a fair nor a reasonable reflection of the evidence submitted." And the Commission said the position that Everton finds itself in is, of course, its own making. The excess over the threshold is significant. The consequence is that Everton's culpability is great. And that's what hopeful accounting, as you mildly put it, Jim, I suppose, with that particular turn of phrase, is what can get you into this mess. We know that Everton have been mismanaged. It's been fairly obvious, you know, for a number of seasons. The fans have been, you know, just tearing their hair out and so on. But when you see this, you think, oh, bloody hell, you thought, well, it's mismanaged, but within the parameters of the rules, which can happen. You know, we say that quite a lot, but this is mismanaged in a catastrophic kind of way.
I mean, you say it can happen, but it's not happened before.
No, when I say mismanaged, you mean you signed poorly, you get relegated, it's been mismanaged. You could say Manchester United have been mismanaged at the moment, that kind of thing. But this is a mismanagement on a rule-breaking level, which is different to, you know, a number of other sides.
But that's exactly what I mean. We've not seen the mismanagement at such a level that it essentially breaks the rules.
Yes.
Yeah.
And interesting, no side has ever avoided relegation after a points deduction. That could change this season.
Yeah.
I think we've spoken about it. I suppose we spoke about it before we went on air, but it feels like if this particular Everton can wear this, you know, points deduction better than Everton of the previous two seasons, especially given the, I suppose, the quality of clubs lower down, it feels like, you know, the fact that they're not even bottom.
No. And the amount of road left as well.
Exactly, and that's important as well.
They've had a 10-point deduction after 12 games. They're 2 points from safety.
Yeah, exactly.
So it shows you, you know, the teams that are down there really are down there. The ramifications of this, you would still fancy Everton to survive. I think Sean Dyche is perhaps the perfect man for this, because I actually don't think he'd be fazed by it that much. I think if you had, say, you know, it seems a while ago now, but say someone like Frank Lampard's still in charge, you know, I think he might be like, oh, bloody hell, what are we going to do with this? And try, you know, Dyche likes that kind of slight siege mentality. Come on, lads, up and at him. All that sort of, you know, sort of good old-fashioned stuff. But the ramifications are not just about this season. The ramifications could go further with regards to action taken potentially from other clubs, because other clubs have been relegated. The aforementioned Leeds United are one. And they could, there are suggestions that those clubs could start to think, hang on a minute here, and take legal action of their own. Because if a club thinks, well, if it wasn't for that, is perhaps a reason why we were relegated.
Yeah.
Now, people might think that's a bit fanciful, but on paper, there is a potential argument to be had there.
Yeah, there's certainly cases to be had. I think in terms of the, you know, one of the things that came out from the statement about the point deduction was that those clubs who feel like they have a grievance have 28 days to put it forward. That doesn't necessarily discount the opportunity for a club to basically go to Everton and state their case and end up with some kind of compensation. We've seen it before with Sheffield United and West Ham previously, with the Carlos Tevez, Javier Mascherano affair, which seems a while ago now. Mm. And throughout the league, in terms of like teams that feel that have missed out on promotion, I think Middlesbrough, there was a situation last year with Derby County, wasn't there, a couple of seasons ago, with regards to like playoff places. So that in itself is sorted out. But then that's just generally, if there is something to, you know, if there is compensation to be paid there, it sounds like there are a few parties who are going to, you know, be having their hand out, which could then, you know, increase the financial strain on Everton going forward as well. It's really interesting delving into this case and finding out just the, I suppose, the web and the level of, I suppose, the level of grey area around just finances, full stop. Mm. Like the borrowing, the lending, the set against, you know, future earnings, the situation with the stadium where Mashiri's basically paid for more than half of it, which is why it's such an attractive thing for Everton to have this in the works, because other owners can buy the club and then benefit off the back of it because of the scale of the stadium. And just, yeah, like they're being rightly punished for something that Premier League clubs do, but they just haven't done it very well, if that makes sense.
But I think that is important that the Premier League set that standard.
Yeah, 100%.
It can't just be for teams that become successful.
Yeah, yeah.
The rules have to be the rules. It is consistent.
I would genuinely recommend, because I appreciate it can be quite hard to get through, but I would recommend, like, football fans generally just reading through it and seeing how ridiculous it is, but also we should underline the fact that a lot of it is quite normal, and it's worryingly normal, which is why this has been brought in the first place.
Yeah, well, the Everton statement finished with, to kind of, you know, expand on perhaps a little point that was being made there, that the club will also monitor with great interest the decisions made in any other cases concerning the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules.
Delicious.
Now we know that they
might liquidate Man United. Come on,
just what you wanted the other week.
Yeah.
Well, indeed, it does set a precedent with that 10-point deduction. Some people may say, "Well, Everton aren't an elite level club; that's why they've done it." Or you could say, "No, they've done this because they are setting down the marker."
Yeah, also, I mean, Everton were one of the founders of the Football League itself.
Yeah, so they're not small.
They're not a small club at all. And I've seen
But they're not elite level, I think.
They're not, but they, you know...
They're not Manchester City or Chelsea, Jim.
No, but they are a significant part of the fabric of English football.
Of course.
Top-flight English football. So I think, you know, that has to be pointed out and stated. But yeah, obviously, Everton have done a very interesting thing there in sort of pointing in the direction of other clubs who are under investigation for this sort of thing. And if this is one charge, you have to wonder, as everybody has been wondering, what 115 charges might bring. Now, you would think, I would be amazed if all of those charges eventually stick to City, if anything does at all. We don't know.
It's going to take a while, isn't it?
It's going to take, I mean, it's going to take a couple of years at least in sort of the best case scenario sort of predictions or projections rather from what I've seen. And I mean, Khaldun al-Mubarak, the City chairman, reportedly told Gianni Infantino, who was UEFA General Secretary at the time, that he would rather spend 30 million on the 50 best lawyers in the world to sue UEFA for the next 10 years than accept any sanctions. So, I mean,
that's an innocent man. That's what I do.
No further questions.
Those quotes are certainly attributed to him widely. So it's not, I don't think it's going to be as clear cut.
I would rather go
case
on the run than face the consequences of my actions.
Yeah.
You'll have to catch me first.
It's almost admirable, isn't it? If it were a movie, you'd be like, I like this.
Yeah, I know.
He's more entertaining than the protagonist.
Watching Catch Me If You Can, being like, why is he chasing Leo? Leave him alone. Yeah. Let him fly a plane. Let him fly a plane.
it is crazy, isn't it? Chelsea, obviously, the situation is quite different. And I think all three of these situations are very, very different.
Yeah,
which is why you can't, like, as funny as it is to be like, okay, well, it's 115 times 10.
Yeah,
you know,
not going to work that way, is it?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, where are the fans in all this?
Yeah.
The fans just have to accept it. You know, the fans have to accept people having a go at their club and them, you know, due to proxy. Ah, well, you lot did. And the fans have to watch a team now who have been deducted some points, you know, or fans of other clubs, you know. So if indeed the club in question have benefited somewhat or greatly, then fans of other clubs sort of go, well we've you know, missed out. I mean, that was very much what, you know, Neil Warnock and Sheffield United were saying, you know. The fans are, again, just,
we all just want it to be clean, don't we? We want the sport to have integrity, and we want it to,
and
everything
consistent
to be
as well.
Yeah, consistent and to be above board.
Can you pick something else that's more achievable that you want, Jim?
Well, Everton's staying up. Well, I mean, just to bring it back to football, Jim made this point last week, I think, that you posited the idea that Everton's upturn in form recently has been because this was looming.
Yeah, they've been thinking about it, right?
Yeah, and but also the point you made was actually would be quite galvanising for the squad as well. And I suppose we're about to see how that plays out going forward.
Well, we should all get a point deduction then if we're struggling.
I'd love one. I bloody love a bloody love a points deduction. Sort the roof out. We're taking some points away from you.
Oh, dear. Shall we go back to international football, everybody?
Yeah.
Where perhaps it's a little cleaner. I don't know.
Is it?
Oh, maybe. Scotland 3, Norway 3.
That's clean.
Doesn't come much cleaner than
That's
that.
Clean.
The 78 only... World Cup. Let's look at the 78 World Cup.
That's it. That's absolutely it. The only dirty thing there were players' shorts. Of course. Former Southampton man Mohamed Elianoussi got a late equaliser to deny the Bonnie Scots. Not that they'll be that bothered at all. It's a fairly entertaining game. And Stuart Armstrong scored a nice goal where he battled his way from the corner flag to score the third.
That goal, it was one of those ones where you only realised how good it was after a couple of replays. Like the reverse pass from John McGinn as well. And the finish itself is really, really precise. Just lovely, lovely bit of football.
A very Armstrong area is that he was sat on his arse at the corner flag at the start of this move and then just like chased it down.
Yeah, a pre-match Scotland Tifo Red will be coming.
It's both... it seems a bit underwhelming, doesn't it? It's like, just, you know, happy to be there. It also seems a little bit terrifying. Bit of the Begbie in it.
But despite qualifying for the Euro, Scotland have now failed to win in their last five games, including friendlies against England and France, we should say.
That's a worry for Steve Clarke, isn't it? He's been talking about that, and they will be frustrated to have not won this game, especially because Elianoussi's goal was very avoidable.
Yeah, very free at the back post, wasn't he? I suppose the one thing that they've got out of their system from Euro 2020 was... God, we're back.
And the way
they've gone through this campaign has been very much without that chip on their shoulder. They've absolutely deserved to be there. It would have been nice if they topped the group. It's not the end of the world. But the run of results is probably quite important because Clark can turn around and be like, lads, come on. You know, we've done this before. Let's not show ourselves up next summer.
Exactly, yeah. And you're right. I think you've summed it up well there that to get straight back in and go, right, no, we mean business. We're not just turning up to break up the numbers and all that kind of stuff. And again, you know, I know I've said this a number of times, and it's not patronising at all. They've never been past the first round for a major tournament. They're going to look at this and go, right, lads, come on. Yeah.
With a decent group, they'll have a good chance.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the players are liking Steve Clarke. I mean, Andy Robertson, who was in attendance, of course, he's injured. So Steve Clarke's had 50 games, want him to get another 50 more.
Maybe I'm looking too much into this because that's on paper quite a normal thing to do. But I think, is there not something to be said for, given the spate of pullouts for the England squad in particular, someone like Andy Robertson, who is, you know, a high value player for a big, big Premier League team, just, I know it's not that far to go, but like being on deck and being part of that celebration says a lot about. I suppose Clark's job, but also just the general feel around the group.
It does. I mean, we spoke about Jude Bellingham with England, and I think he wanted to join the camp, didn't he? I'm not sure he did or not, but it's that kind of, I want to be with the lads, you know. Yeah. And it's an element of, there is a jolly up, do you know what I mean? Like, we all like being with each other, so, you know, the sort of...
Get me a t-shirt.
Exactly. But also, you want to be there to support. You don't want to miss out, I think, is it.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah,
and that's exactly what you want in international level.
None of it should be taken for granted. Yeah,
certainly not. No. So yes, elsewhere in the European qualifying, Romania beat Israel 2-1, which means that Norway can no longer make the playoffs for Euro 2024. So Norway and Haaland.
Another summer of rest for Haaland.
Cool.
Brilliant.
He won't be there next summer. Don't worry. But Romania are there. They've qualified. And it was Hadji who got the goal, of course, son of Gyorgy.
Absurd.
Great.
So good.
And, so great.
And they've qualified. How about that? I want to talk about Group F, though, for a minute, gentlemen. Belgium beat Azerbaijan 5-0. Belgium, of course, are going to be at the Euros. Romelu Lukaku got 4 goals in that game. And I thought, oh, blimey, I wonder how many international goals he got, because he scores fairly rare. He's got 83.
He is the 7th highest scorer in the history of men's international football.
I mean,
that is nuts.
113 appearances, 83 goals. He's been playing for Belgium for, when did he get his first call up? Maybe 2011. He's been there for a little while.
For them for a long time.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he's 30 now. And I just sort of I'd sort of slightly written off Lukaku in my mind. I don't know why, a bit foolish. I think
there's been a few comments that have been made, like from Brassel as well, in the studio and so on, as if to say, oh, yeah, Lukaku. I think maybe because he's some of the stuff he said in the media and some of the moves he's made, you know, because like Inter, you know, was really vintage Lukaku.
Yeah.
And then he left them because he was a bit unhappy and then he's gone to play for Roma, which he's doing quite well in pure goal scoring terms. He's doing okay. And you think, yeah, I think in this country we see him as I couldn't quite cut the mustard at the top level.
But you know he's good, don't you?
Yeah.
But
he always scored goals, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously West Brom and Everton fans, you know, will remember him very, very well. Manchester United, it was a bit of a mixed bag, but he still did okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, he ended up having a stomach issue mm-hmm. that was incorrectly diagnosed.
Right.
But then, like, obviously flashes of being really good. And
but at a time, yeah. well, basically post-Ferguson, how can anybody really
yeah,
kind of...
A lot
you know,
of churn there, wasn't there?
Yeah, and again... Chelsea, it was a slightly funny time, and
but even that moving to Chelsea was like right, you're back, aren't
yeah,
you?
It really looked like he was going to be as well. I was at the Emirates when Chelsea beat us 3-0 with Lukaku leading the line, and he had a really good game. And it was early in the season; it might even have been the season opener. It was certainly among the first few games, and it looked like oh god, he's going to absolutely tear it up. It was like he was fulfilling his destiny. It was fascinating that it just didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I think that. That again, maybe we just sort of think, ah, yeah, he's good, but he's just not quite there. We expected him to be this utter Rolls Royce of a player. But then if you look at some of the numbers, particularly at international level, I was like, bloody hell, actually, sometimes maybe we don't appreciate him. I mean, yeah. there's an argument, you know, he's one of Belgium's best ever players.
Oh,
now,
well,
people might say, oh, well, they've not produced that many, but well, I don't know. I think that's, I mean, the next one down on the list is obviously their top scorer in their history. The next one down on the list is 50 behind.
Yeah.
Eden Hazard on 33. And Eden Hazard wasn't a bad player. I know he's not a striker, but he still was a forward player.
Yeah. So he's tied in seventh with a guy called Ali Mabkout, who played for the UAE. He got 83 goals in 112 games, mm-hmm. which is one fewer than Lukaku. On the list in sixth is Ferenc Puskás, who got 84 goals in 85 games for Hungary, which is mad.
Yeah, and above him, it's you know obviously Ronaldo and Messi are above him, and Ali Dai and one or two others. But again, like, I know, and people might say, yeah, but your man from UAE, we don't really know much about him, and so on and so forth. Yeah, but Lukaku has played at big tournaments. You know, he was part of the Belgian side that finished third in 2018. Blah blah blah. I don't know. A little bit of appreciation there for old Rom, because I think he deserves it. But he took his goals well. Azerbaijan were down to 10 men because Eddie got sent off.
Oh, Eddie.
Eddie.
Not word.
Be a bit more steady, Eddie. Let's finish with a Group B update. Ireland lost 1-0 to the Netherlands. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. They did score, but it was VAR.
Perfect. Well done.
I did wonder when I saw the goal that they caused running at goal from the halfway line and scoring. I thought, hold on.
His finish was great, though.
It was. Unchallenged finish.
Yeah. I was like, I watched this bloke for 6 months. Where's this come from?
He won't be able to run for another week.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, it had been suggested that losing this game would help Ireland reach the playoffs, but Slovakia's 4-2 victory over Iceland ended Ireland's chances of reaching the playoffs and qualifying for the Euros. It wasn't their loss to the Netherlands that stopped it. It was Slovakia beating Iceland, of course. So poor old Ireland. I wonder if Kenny will still be in charge for much longer. Elsewhere in the group, France beat Gibraltar 14-0.
Unnecessary.
It was genuinely the most I've ever seen a football match be like the Harlem Globetrotters, because they seem to very quickly start treating it that way, didn't
they? Right,
like,
yeah,
we can all get on the score sheet here. We can try outlandish things. Mbappe's hat-trick goal was from miles out. Absolutely beautiful finish. Everyone getting in on the act. Chested assist from Griezmann, just like Olivier Giroud celebrating like he just won the World Cup again. Because I guess every goal he gets just makes it, it's just a little bit longer that Mbappe has to wait, isn't it, to break his record.
I think there should be a rule that if you go, say, 5 or 6 up, the referee then just has to go, right, headers and volleys, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all you got. You can't just carry on like this.
No, I like it.
But
14-0.
Against the Rock of Gibraltar.
Mm-hmm. 10-man Rock of Gibraltar.
That's disrespecting them, and therefore it disrespects us, Jim. We're all in this together. 9 different French players scored. When asked in an interview about the 9 different scorers, Mbappe replied, 10 with the Gibraltar player.
Why is he saying that? Leave it.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I know.
That's
I
like quite it. Mean.
That is quite Killian. Mean. Do you now sympathise with Emi Martinez post-World Cup, all that treatment he gave Mbappe? Maybe Emi's right.
I did like the fact that France was 7-0 up at half-time.
Half-time. And they kept on going.
Yeah.
Because often you get just one or two more, and they're like, no, people are paid to be here.
Yeah.
But that was how it felt. The crowd were absolutely loving it, and it was almost a sort of... Maybe it was a very arrogant pre-victory lap that will come back to bite them.
Let's sincerely hope so, Jim.
But genuinely, they look absolutely terrifying. Yeah. Don't they? I know it's only the 10 men of the Rock of Gibraltar, but they still scored 14 goals.
In France, they're now calling them the Pebble of Gibraltar. Yeah, bloody France. Can't they get like sanctioned and kicked out of the tournament?
Probably not.
Should we look through the FY lenses?
Let's do it. Oh dear, everybody. Well, there we are. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Don't miss Ramble Reacts with myself and Jim tonight, because England will play better. We promise you that.
They will.
They've told us they will. They've got their lattes and their milkshakes in their bellies, and it will.
And they know we're watching. Exactly. And that we're going to be reacting immediately. So what more motivation could they possibly need?
They would not let us down, and they therefore wouldn't let you down, everybody, because we are in this together, as
give
I
us,
say.
Give us 15.
They'll do it for The Rock. Okay, that's Gibraltar, not that actor. Follow us on X, TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Football Ramble. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vatushin Hantharaja.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you tonight.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.